It is Thursday, September 7th, and I am Jan Yeager. I am speaking with Lillian Elvsas and Sharon Bond at the Homer Public Library, and this is a recording for Seldovia Project Jukebox, and particularly the NPS Traditional Heritage Grant. And we are talking about Lillian and Sharon's memories of St. Nicholas Orthodox, Russian Orthodox Church in Seldovia, and just Russian Orthodox traditions in the communities in the area. And so, Lillian, you grew up in Port Graham, is that correct?
Yes, I grew up in Port Graham until went to school there till I graduated the eighth grade, and then from there, I went to high school in Oregon, the Indian school, a boarding school. But then my parents, after the cannery burnt down in Port Graham, 1960, we started to move to Seldovia in the spring and be there during the summer, and then move back to Port Graham in the fall. So I spent most of my growing up life in Seldovia, besides my 4 years in high school.
Was that before you went to high school?
Yeah.
And so your family moved to Seldovia year-round later on?
I think my parents just stayed there after a while. After I went out to high school, they stayed there because of the boys went to high school in Seldovia. My brothers, two of my brothers went to high school there. And my dad's dad, Father Reverend Nicholas Moonen, was a priest in English Bay, which we call Nunnawik, is the native name for it. It's always been called Nunnawik with the lagoon. And that's where they changed the name back to the Aleutic name from English Bay. People, a lot of people still call English Bay, but a lot of us know it by Nunnawik. And my dad's dad, Reverend Nicholas, was a priest there, and he was preaching also in Seldovia. There's a lot of services there, and he did a lot of marriages there, performed the marriages. And there's also, I'm thinking it's either Alex or, I think it's Alex Shadura, was a priest from Kenai that used to also come into Seldovia for church services, weddings, funerals, baptismals. And also, how would they say, when you consecrate, or when my dad was blessed to become a subdeacon, it happened in Seldovia when we were living there. And so there's been a lot of other priests that have served in Seldovia, the people, the community. Like, there's very few of us that are there. And I remember Mary and Phil Kale there. They came from Kodiak, and she kind of was the head of the church where they took care of the church and took care of the priests when they came into Seldovia and had, you know, homes for them, places for them to stay and to feed them. So there's been a variety of priests that have come to Seldovia, and also the bishops of Alaska.
So did Seldovia ever have a resident priest, or was it always visiting from other, was the priest always a visitor from other communities?
Yes, we've had about two of them, permanent priests that live there, resident, right, remember?
Yeah. Oh, George Putnikoff and Sergei Active.
Yeah.
Is that really only was two?
Huh?
There was really only two?
Yeah, everybody else just came and
traveling.
Traveling.
Yeah, because the priest from Ninelchik would come, and then the one from Kenai, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes from Anchorage.
Do you remember when the resident priests were there, approximately? Mm-hmm. Like what years that might have been?
George Putnikoff would have been there in the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay, so like Seldovia 80, had...
80, 81, 82, 83, around and then.
Okay, so Seldovia had regular services then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
And then Sergei Active, he was there when I got married, so that would be like 17. late, like 98. He would have been there before that, though. Probably 96 through, how long was he there? 96 through at least 2000, I would think, or later.
Yeah.
Because he married my husband and I and baptized my kids both. So, but he moved to Nanmolik for a while, and he was still serving our church in Soldovia.
Okay.
And sometimes Port Graham. Because mm-hmm. I think Port Graham had their own priest.
Uh-oh. Not until later. I think he Sergei Active served Soldovia, Port Graham, and Nanmolik. And whenever a priest is established in the villages, they had to cover, they always covered Soldovia and Port Graham also.
Okay. So then would they just skiff from community to community or fly or?
Oh, yeah. They had to fly.
So they'd be doing several services every Sunday potentially?
No, they usually had a service one Sunday at one community.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because he'd rotate Saturdays and Sundays between the three. Sometimes he came like maybe two or three weeks later to Soldovia.
Yeah.
We didn't have him every weekend.
Yeah. If he wasn't serving in our town, I guess is how it would be. Or sometimes they come on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And then stay in their resident town for the Sunday service. Or he'd alternate them.
About, I know it obviously changed through the years, but about how many people would attend a service?
Oh, let's see. One, two, three, four. Five or six at the most, huh?
When Father Sergei, but like with Father Putnikoff, I would say it was higher because we had like
10.
Yeah, and he had a large
plus
family.
Kids. Yeah, plus our kids.
There was more then. And then when we had visiting priests, like early, right after they did the renovations to the church, we had a lot more then because we had Clara Oaks and we had.
I never thought that
Elaine,
far back.
And we had.
Was that in the 90s?
Like Jesse, and I mean.
80s?
Yeah.
I think the reconsecration was in the 80s.
Yeah.
1980.
Yeah.
I remember exact day, mm-hmm. October, mm-hmm. October 18th, 1980. I remember it because that's Frankie Sirikoff's birthday.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was a wonderful, wonderful thing happening, you know, mm-hmm. for the church and for the community because Bishop, what was his name?
Gregory.
Bishop Gregory. I think he was one of our favorites, I guess. He just fit into the native communities. And he's from, could have been from Bosnia or somewhere. He's,
I don't know, but he was really friendly. He was really nice.
Yeah, he took to a lot of natives, and he just loved being around the native community. He even spoke the language.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
And so he was the bishop for all of Alaska?
Yes.
And he came to do the consecration?
Gee, we've gone through how many bishops within the last 20 years? Four?
That's more like 40 years. many.
No, it's since been, then. There isn't too many for, like when you said 40 years.
It's been 40 years since then.
But I've gone through a lot of bishops. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a great thing to have. It's just kind of like somebody new comes in, is a different ethnicity, and they're mostly Russians, or are related to the Russian people, and maybe I think even one of them was from Czechoslovakia. Yeah. it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, everybody's got different ways of singing and preaching and mingle with people. I mean, it's interesting.
It's actually very interesting because they have like almost like an entourage. I mean, they have assistant. Who would it be? He's a priest.
Who?
The bishop.
Yeah.
Travels. Like how the Pope travels. He's got.
Yeah. He'd be like our Pope.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's different, like, because then you have a lot of people in the service. It's not just your priest and your reader. There's the bishop and usually two or three priests, and then you have your reader, one or two maybe, and then you had some subdeacons, and then you had altar boy. And usually there's three or something.
Sometimes I've seen six.
Yeah.
Six altar boys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so are they part of the entourage, or are they traveling from the community?
Well, some of them are residents. Like,
okay.
Because usually the resident, like the altar boys are the residents. Usually there's the bishop and he has an assistant and then a priest, and then a couple priests will come and serve.
Mm-hmm.
But like the whole service is different. I mean, it's the same, but there's a lot more people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know my dad's been, ever since I was a little girl when we lived in Port Graham, I used to hike to Nanuk with him for the holidays. And that's one of the reasons why I love to sing in church. Or I love to sing anyway. I go karaoke. And it's something because I learned when I was young, going to church, and we'd have to sing. So I love to sing. And I've been a reader, like a choir director. Sometimes it's me and the priest in the church. And I'd be every one of those. Somebody that lights the candles, like the starosta, is someone that takes care of the church, makes sure the bells are rung, the candles are lit, and it's warm in the church or whatever, you know, heat going. And Sharon knows ever since she was little.
Generally, that's a male. But, I mean, most of the time it'd be the priest, his family, and us too, or maybe the priest and us too. And then eventually my brother or my kids. So we multitasked a lot.
Yeah, it's, I've helped with services. I've read what they call epistle. I've also, I'd start the singing. There'd, like I said, sometimes there'd be me and the priest because everybody's working or doing, they're out of town, whatever, you know. There was not that many in our congregation in Soldovia. But to sing the songs that we sing in the church, you know, we know them all. We know the tones, and it's amazing how you can pick up and sing the songs. Mm-hmm. And know them. And I can, ever since I was little, we started, you know, in Russian Christmas, we sing in Slavonic. And there's some few songs that are sung in English, but most of them are in Slavonic. And I know every one of the songs that we go starring, when we go starring, you never forget. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, I'll be doing something and I'll start humming or singing when I'm home, but it's a good practice for me because I won't forget.
Mm-hmm.
But it's same thing with Easter and all the church services. I practically know by heart. I just have to hear somebody start the song, then I just catch on and harmonize.
And are those songs in Slavonic also, or is it
some
mostly
are.
Okay?
Some are, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were learning the songs, did they teach you the meaning so you could understand what you're singing about? Since I'm
not
assuming Slavonic wasn't spoken a whole lot.
No, in the beginning there wasn't. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of teaching, I don't think. Because I would ask them, like, and sometimes there's a, that's just you know, that's the way it is. This is what we're doing, you know. There's not a lot of instruction, I don't think, especially in the earlier years. And there is more so now because the priests go to seminary and they are instructed a lot, so they can explain a lot of that, which is really nice because in the beginning, like being a kid, you just did it because that's what everybody was doing. And, yeah, there is formalities and things, and there's no, like, handbook or no written, like, this is what you do. There in the books, though, there is, like, things in parentheses, like, it'll say the priest is doing this or the reader is doing this or the subdeacon is doing this. But in the beginning, you can feel a little bit lost when you're trying to follow along in the book or the service book that you're following.
And what about the, are there other parts that are in Slavonic also, or is it mostly the songs? Because most of the service in English or in other languages?
It's mixed.
Mm-hmm. It is mixed.
Yeah, it's either in Russian, or the way I understand it, there's Russian and then there's Slavonic. Mm-hmm. The Russian is a little harder to read, and I would have to have learned it when I was young. I can't read it, mm-hmm. But I can read the Slavonic.
Is that because the Russians in the Cyrillic writing?
Yeah, they're okay. Old-fashioned, looks like an old-fashioned writing, and I look at it like, whoa, I can't read that. So it like the Lord's Prayer, I used to say that in Russian. And after I went to high school, for some odd reason, I quit saying it, and now I say it in English. Now it's in Sukhstun, in our Aleutic language. Mm. I still have to learn that. I would love to record myself or put it in a recording and give it to my grandboys.
That would be terrific.
Sharon and Peter.
Yeah. 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 So, like with Father Active, he would do an English version and a Slavonic version, and then Aleutic, but he's not Aleutic.
He learned it. They sing it in their Yupik language,
right.
Too.
Okay. And so, when you were a kid, you mentioned going over to Nanwalik. Is that because there wasn't a church in Port Graham?
No, there's never really been a church in Port Graham till 1990.
No, I want to say it was 80? Earlier than that. It was in the 80s, because I was pretty young still.
Because it used to be the, you know where the church is now? That used to be a community hall. Have you been in Port Graham?
Only once.
Oh, okay. So it was a community hall, and they converted it to a church.
Okay.
And when they built a bigger community hall, and that was in the 80s, I think. And then they've added
We lived, when you were small, when you were a baby, when we lived in Port Graham, when we did go, mm-hmm. It was a community home.
I remember it.
The phone was in there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They had one phone.
Mm-hmm. In the community?
Yeah, and it was a satellite phone, if I remember right.
Oh, wow.
So you paid
You could a listen lot. To the conversations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so, but you mentioned your grandfather was a priest. So he lived in Port Graham, but the church was in Nanwalik?
No, he lived in Nanwalik.
He lived in Nanwalik, okay.
He was born in Nanwalik.
Okay.
His father mm-hmm. was from Fort Knox. Fort Knox.
In Kentucky?
No, not Fort Knox. Fort Ross.
Oh, okay. California.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where his grandfather mm-hmm. came from. And I don't remember how Father Moonen ended up in Nanwalik. Oh, there was a settlement in Nanwalik, a Russian settlement. Alexandrov.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Alexandrovsk.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that was your great-great-grandfather who was from Fort Ross?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't remember exactly what year my dad's dad, Father Moonen, was ordained a priest.
So when you were a girl, was he still there and still doing services?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when my husband and I got married in Nanwalik, my dad was there, and his dad, Father Moonen, was there. Father Moonen was in the wheelchair, and my dad was there. It's quite an event. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Who was a priest? Somebody from Kenai, right?
Yeah. He was a radio salesman.
Yeah, some of the priests have, like, other jobs to pay, you know, depending on how big their community is, what they can afford. I think most all priests work, like, a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 job within a reason. You know, they know that, like, on Wednesdays we would have church Wednesday evenings, I think.
Yeah, well, there's services during Lenten, too, during the week, especially the Holy Week.
Yeah.
The Bright Week.
Church of the Day, I would say, during that time.
During the Lenten week before Easter?
Okay.
And so what are some of the other traditions tied to different holidays that you can think of?
You know, there's our Orthodox calendar has all the feast days. We call the feast days the holidays because of the... Oh, my mind went blank. Feast days is because of the saints, saint days where are celebrated by church services maybe 2 days in a row, one the day before and one that day, is which is a saint day. We have St. Herman Day, we have St. Nicholas Day, we have St. Sergius and Valam. Mm-hmm. We have different days throughout the year. Every month there's some kind of feast day. And there's days of the month, a certain time of the year. We have Lenten, where you're Lent, you can eat only certain things, no dairy, no meat.
Right, your diet is more restricted, so no dairy, no meat, and fish on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
No alcohol. So, what's left? Sugar and bread and vegetables. You can have all the vegetables you wanted.
So you could have sweets and so on?
Because everything has sugar in it. There's bread.
But there would be some people, like, as I was older, I know, sort of like, oh, for Lent, I'm giving up soda. You know, like it was more conventional, like as we progressed, I guess, people would just give up different things. And I know even, like, to this day, when it comes to Easter, not people of my religion, they're like, I'm not going to be on Facebook during Lent, you know, so they take 40 days off, you know, just...
It's like let's abstain from something, something that you really like. You need to kind of abstain from it for 40 days.
Yeah. So I know the priests are more strict about that. Like there's certain foods they can eat, and but yeah, meat they don't eat, and they don't eat dairy. And I don't remember if they do eggs. I want to say no. And that's why I think when it's Easter we get to have eggs.
Yeah, I think it's
eggs and ham.
Eggs, anything, you know, warm blood, animals, fish you can eat.
On Fridays.
Or anytime.
The more people who are more strict with their Lent, it was only Fridays.
Yeah.
Which, that leaves a lot of, I don't know, what would you eat, beans? Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just at Easter, though. There are some during some of the other holidays, isn't there?
There's some restrictions.
Yeah, there is throughout the year.
Yeah. I want to say there's one around Christmas, too. But the one that we follow mostly was at Easter, the 40 days before Easter. And then, of course, so we would go to church a lot that week because it's Holy Week, right? The week before is it week after?
I think it's both, but more of a Lenten restricted diet before Easter.
But what I'm getting around to is that, so then we would go to church a lot that week, and then on Easter, on Saturday night, we go at 11:30 to mm-hmm. church. And you're going to church till like 4 or 5 in the morning. Yeah. Those ones, there's a lot of memories because it's goofy stuff because you're really tired.
Mm-hmm.
But hair catching on fire, stuff like that.
Hair catching on fire?
Well, you're holding a candle.
And maybe nodding off because it's 4 in the morning.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And just, you know, and everybody comes in. There's a lot of people. And you can smell, like, the frosting in the air from the caliche. And so we dye our eggs red. Mm-hmm. And how is that done? Because I've never actually done it. Our eggs, dyeing them red. It's with crepe paper, isn't it?
Crepe paper or food coloring and vinegar.
Being the way they eat now, all I could think of is red dye is really toxic.
But anyway, I think
you don't eat the egg shell anyway. So.
Right.
And so going to church, I would say that's what I remember is 3, 4, or 5 in the morning, depending on which priest you had, because sometimes they sang slower. And then they would have a brunch in the morning. And I remember having it immediately like 4 or 5 in the morning. And everybody brings a dish. And so you're tired and you get to eat meat and you get to eat all these other foods you haven't ate in a long time. And then sometimes we did it where we went home, took naps, and then came and ate like at 9 or 10, right? Or mm-hmm. noon or something. A little bit more. That was probably easier, but it was still fun. Like I remember doing that in Port Graham, being crazy tired.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look around, you see kids asleep everywhere. And
the celebration.
Yeah. But even in church, kids would be sleeping on coats everywhere, little babies and stuff. And, yeah. And so, in our churches, we don't have pews. I mean, they have chairs aside for, like, elderly or people who are disabled. So you stood a lot. So that many hours of church is...
I remember when I was a kid going to church in Nanuaq, there was no such a thing as chairs. Sometimes I'd see a blazer box, mm-hmm. and I'd thinking, "Oh, I wish I could sit down there." So a lot of times we were on our knees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the old church in Nanuaq, it's all wood planks, and we were on our knees. And when we I'd stand up, I'd have a big red marker on my knee, and you could see the crease from the boards, and I'm like, wow.
Yes, there's, and there is a lot of kneeling and standing for Easter week. So, yeah. And then...
And the church services aren't 1 hour. They could start anywhere from 9 o'clock until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
But generally, I would say it was like 9:30 until
11:30. 10 until noon sometimes. Yeah. Depends on what's been in the service. Sometimes they have quite a few people that receive communion, or it's a special service, or if the service is for prayers for that have died, have deceased, we pray for our deceased. And we have something special like rice. It's a rice pudding, but it's dry. It's got raisins in it, or it could have pineapple in it. My mom used to make the rice pudding. It wasn't wet. It wasn't like rice pudding.
It is a little bit. I mean, it's just not like how you see pudding now. Sweet. It would be like coconut rice, how you see the texture of that.
Okay,
but
yeah.
There's fruit in it, and it's sweet. So.
And that's the remembrance of... over the dead. And the thing that I'd like to see is if this is put on CD, I would love to have some pictures, like the Easter time when there's all the Easter bread kulich that everybody brings. They're all different decorated Easter breads with the frosting and red eggs everywhere.
But what I can say about this is because I lived in Seattle and went to church in Seattle and also in different communities, that is really territorial, those traditions, because we dye our eggs red and we have caliche in there and coffee cans made in that. It's a sweet bread and it's frosted and then we decorated it Well, when I went to Seattle, nobody's eggs were red, except for people who are from my area. And we were like, hey, then you knew you're from that area. They just did their eggs either white or they dyed them like Easter color egg dye. And they did not decorate their kulich. They were, some of them weren't even like the tall shape. Some of them were
bread loaf.
Looked like mound. A, yeah. And they did it, and they just kind of put a glaze over them, and they weren't even frosted. And I was like, so when I brought mine, there, people knew where I was from, which was kind of neat that it is territorial. I don't know about other places. I just know here in or Seattle and Saldovia or our area.
Yeah, everybody's different. Everybody decorates their, like you said, territorial. A lot of us, we just put our bread, our Easter bread decorated a certain way, and we do put them... some people put them in baskets. Some get fancy and make nice. My mom had a plate, and it looked like it was just made for that.
For the
Easter bread and eggs, because the center of the glass is about this big, and the outside is got hollow spots where you'd like put deviled eggs. But these, my mom and her sister-in-law put eggs, colored eggs around it, and the kulich was in the center.
So generally, that's what I remember, is that on a plate, they would have the kulich, which was tall, probably about 7 or 8 inches, and then you put your eggs around the kulich, so that you bring them to that church service, and they bless all of them, and you bring your eggs, too. And then when I was younger, we didn't have Easter egg hunts, but I know in Port Grant and Nunwalloc, they do. They have Easter egg hunts that morning for the kids. Which they have a lot more kids. I mean, it was like me and my brother and the priest's kids. But, yeah. And then on that same note, I think, like for Christmas with starring.
Oh, yeah.
That's territorial, too. Like, they do things different.
By the tones of the songs, how they sing.
And even what treats and things they put out.
Yeah. Something give it different.
It is, because like the Kuskokwim area, they do things, it's kind of the same, but it's different. Like the way that they sing is different. They're
different tones.
Yeah.
And they're all different. And the thing you know about it is, I have been to the starring during the holidays, Christmas holidays in Anchorage, and I've seen different people from different areas that celebrate Christmas. This is in January 7th till the 18th. And they sing the same songs, but they're all in different tunes.
Yeah, so when she says tones in the church, you have, is it 8 tones or 6? 8? 7?
8.
It is 8? Okay. So it's like you would say like the melody. Like the way, the rhythm of how they sing the song. So to us, we're just like, they're singing it wrong. But I don't know, you can talk about starring and then.
You made me think of when we were singing in Saldovia, I was totally off on that tone. And I could see Father's show recording.
He was using one tone and you were using a different one?
Or? Well, I started in a different tone, and that's when I see the shoulders doing this number. Peter was the altar boy, and his Peter, he's facing out towards the where we are, and Father's facing the altar, and I could see him doing this number, and I'm going like, oh no, I already knew it started off wrong. And after that, I started hearing. Sergei probably told Uncle John, they know there's tone 9? Tone 9 is off with a tone that's on. Yeah. So, the starring has, it's a very, very traditional event also. And I remember as a little girl, when we'd go house to house, and the only thing I used to like to see is the table full of goodies, and talk about goodies. Anything, everything you could think of that was set on the table for the appreciation of the people in that home. they put out. And I think it was like a competition, too. They'd have pies, 10, 15 different kind of pies. They'd have fish pies, you know what that is. Huh? Mm-hmm. And they'd have soups of different seal, ducks, chicken, beef, whatever. And name it, it was there. By the time you got done eating at that house, you were too full to sing anymore. I mean, it's such a celebration that it just uplifts, especially with the singing. If the singing is just perfect and you know it and you feel it, and then like, oh, wow. And thinking, gee, I hope this don't end. So the tradition is still going, and all the songs are sung in Slavonic. And there are some that are sung in Sukhstun, in our native Alutiiq language, and there are some that are sung still in Russian.
And then they have English, too.
And English. Yeah. So the people carry this star. It's they're called the Bethlehem Star. The three wise men follow the star. So that's what the tradition of our starring is from, that scenery. And when you go into the homes and the people are ready, they're waiting, they've been waiting for you to enter their homes to go starring. We call it Slavic, or it's the Russian word is Slavic. And ours is Slavic with the native accent in it. So this, you know, it's still going on. And I'm hoping I can get something going here in Homer. Because in Soldovia, when I go over, I need to bring the star over. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to retire it maybe and put it in the museum here.
So the star, it's traditionally decorated every year. Mm-hmm. So it's tinsel and it's the streamers.
Great
and it's very vibrant. It's metallics and they use wrapping paper and there's an icon in the middle. So it's a stick with a circle for the icon, and then they build it out of wood, the frame, and it's just a wood frame, and it's got
eight points
on it so that it can spin. And I think it spins one direction too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only a certain direction.
I see people just swing it in different directions,
yeah.
Both directions.
Oh, it is both. And so they carry that, and it's decorated, I think, right before Christmas. So the starring is on the 7th, 8th, and the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and everybody.
Three nights.
And I don't know if they just go to everybody's house or if people let somebody know that they want the star to come to their house and they make a list. And so it's, you know, anywhere from 10 to 30 houses you go to sometimes or anything. Depends on how many people you have in your church community. Mm-hmm. But like in Port Graham, none at all. Like they start like 2 or 3 in the afternoon and they go well until probably 10 or 11 or midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Because every place you go, you sing the same, which would be like a Christmas carol, the same song, and they include the family members in the household. And then when at the end, if they say a prayer for the family, then you get to have the treats. And sometimes it's just cookies and candy and chocolate. Other times it's a full meal. And I think they try and organize who's going to have like the bigger meal. I mean, people will talk and say, this is what I'm offering. And so, yeah, they put out the treats. And then once everybody's ate and had their treats and visited, and then they go on to the next house. And so that continues on. But that was a really fun part because you never knew what somebody was going to have out. And do you remember those mandarin oranges that came in the box at Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese ones?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody usually had those in the red paper. And that's like a Christmas memory to everybody. But for us, I mean, that was probably a pretty expensive thing because fruit in December in a village is kind of hard to come by. And those little card candies, we ate lots of those, and the ribbon candy. And
card candy?
Hard candy.
Oh, hard candy, yeah, okay.
The filled ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those kinds of things is what I remember about.
So do you remember doing starring in Soldovia?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But it wasn't always the 7th, 8th, and 9th. Maybe the 9th. They would because they would bring people from the villages to come over and do that. And they bring their choir and the reader or the priest. So we would have one or two nights of that. And then, so the masking, I don't know if that's church related. I would say no, it is not. I would say that's culturally related.
We're still interested in it,
yeah.
though. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I know
because there's like rules with the church and the masking, mm-hmm. and
it's a tradition. The music is Russian, mm-hmm. or you know, it's an Oriental.
Because I want to say that, like, the priests almost, there's some of that frown on a little bit, like if especially if it started too early, because you had to wait until the 9th, right, yeah. or the 10th, the 9th, because.
7, 8, 9. It's in, yeah. on the third day.
Yeah. But okay, that so makes for a late night.
So 7th, 8th, 9th would be starring. And so you'd go do starring, and then when, as soon as the starring finished on the 9th, you go into the masking?
Mm-hmm. Until the 18th.
Okay.
17th or 18th?
Until the 17th, because that's New Year's.
So there'd be masking every night?
No, that wasn't. That would be the last night. New Year's is the 14th. Okay, so Christmas is the 7th of January, and this is the Gregorian calendar. And then the 14th is the New Year. So they would have the New Year celebration, but they'd start masking on the 9th, and that would be every night, right? Until the 14th, and the 14th is the New Year masking. What do they call it? The New Year's
celebration?
Celebration. Mm-hmm. And then they do it a couple more nights, and then the 17th it's done, because the 18th they bless the water, right?
Midnight of the 17th, maybe. Midnight.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm a little bit familiar with, you know, the masking and the relation to the New Year and so on, but do they go through the whole process every night with the Old Year and the New Year
no.
and so on?
Okay. That's only that one night.
Okay, so what are the earlier nights like?
It's just like a Halloween. It's like Halloween, but you're dancing to music, to what is it, Scandinavian music or Russian music?
It is, and it's the same. I thought it was the same song, but then when you hear other people play it, sometimes it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Remember that cartoon, the box cartoon? That SpongeBob?
Well, that's how they
use that now.
And, like, some people really don't like that, though, because it sounds like that SpongeBob song. Mm. And they've altered it a little bit to where it does sound like that. So I would say each band, it's a little bit different.
It's younger generation. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. younger generation has taken over the music and, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of things. And as the years go, everything changes. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that since I was a kid. Different beliefs, different the tunes or songs are different.
I liked when they had the accordion in it, though.
Yeah, oh yeah, somebody they had the accordion. Do you remember Grandpa's violin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had. I mean, for a long time in such remote areas, they had some pretty cool instruments. And they would sometimes have a drummer. I know they do now. But at least the electric guitars and the mm-hmm. accordion and the violin.
I was very fortunate. My husband used to take us down to the village for the holidays since mm-hmm. Sharon was growing up.
Mm-hmm. And when you say
Peter
the village, you mean
to do the
Nunwallik or
program? A little
Peter,
bit.
Yeah. But he didn't go as much as you did.
No. Because we had actually a house in program for mm-hmm. a few years when I was younger. And I don't remember. I just remember what Dado said is we had the first house with running water and CB radios. And I don't know. You would know if that's true or not. I just remember Dad always saying that. But with the masking.
Us and Riley and Stella.
Yeah.
It's the first people to use a CB, mm-hmm. Citizens Band radio.
Then we had the running water too.
That was, yeah.
Which, it was a really tiny little house. But it was a house. So with the masking is I think somebody gathers all the clothes, or do they keep clothes every year? Like, do they have a stash for masking clothes?
They wash them, but they, every once in a while, somebody will donate some clothes. They'll maybe buy some at the thrift store and bring them in. And, mm-hmm. and they usually wash the masks, the cloths. The masks are made of, you know, people paint, use crayons to color pieces of cut sheet, you know, from a white sheet. They cut them up and make drum masks.
Do you think in the beginning they may have been flour sacks?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Because yeah. That's what it reminds me of when you see how flour sacks were white and they were reused for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably fit on a head perfectly. And they just cut holes for the eyes and I don't know about the nose. I know the mouth and the eyes. And they would draw like faces, like makeup on them and different things. And then as things evolved, then there was masks, like latex masks and different costumes. But a lot of times it would be like they'd be wearing normal clothes, like robes were pretty popular, and snowsuits and blanket sheets, you know.
Yeah, and I think they also celebrated in Soldovia earlier years,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the people from, I think, the Kenai area, Kenai Sea tribes, natives, would come because there was family and relatives, and they just came down to celebrate with who was living in Soldovia then. They'd, you know, bring the tradition down. And I think they still try to do it for New Year's. Yeah. New Year's there, and it's different in every community.
And so the masking would usually be at some sort of community
room? Center.
Yeah, okay.
It's an event, you know, mm-hmm. to keep. There's religion in it.
Mm-hmm.
That I remember as a kid, even now, there's always prayers that they say before you start and after. And there's tradition is after you have masked all those days, you take on the last night, you go after your shadow. You capture your shadow, and they take their masks off.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have to do is go to the streams, and that's when they make the holy water, and they wash off their faces with that,
mm-hmm.
with the water.
So can you explain a little bit more what you mean by capturing your shadow?
It's just the capturing the shadow. It means that, you know, you can't stop. You can't go masquerading and just leave it at that and mm-hmm. take your mask off. You're done. Mm-hmm. The tradition is you need to grab that spirit and make sure you captured it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't admit that spirit is still wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I understand it. Somebody might explain it different ways, but that's how I understood and seemed like I heard that before from somebody, maybe my dad, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that you can't just leave out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the way we grew up and what the beliefs were in our culture. And every community is different.
Because the masquerading is fun, but it can be scary, especially like little kids, you see them hiding. There was a pool table. They'd be hiding underneath it because there are people you don't know who they are. I mean, you can, as you get older, you can recognize the way people dance, the way that they move. Because they're wearing a mask, they're wearing different clothes, they're dancing goofy, you know, and they interact with the crowd a lot. And it's just goofiness and dancing. And they're going in a circle to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite of NASCAR. They're going right. But
all the dancers are going in a circle, or just the masked ones?
Well, mostly it's
masquerade, or everyone
so
is masked.
So everybody's wearing a costume.
Okay,
is what you're supposed to. I think your face is supposed to be covered, right? Is there a rule on that? It just seems like everybody's face is covered.
Yeah, that's somebody will if they especially the elders if they don't like something on their face, they'll just get up and dance.
Yeah. And then after that, after they've done masking, they'll do waltzing, right? They'll dance, mm-hmm. partner dance. So, and that...
For New Year's, yeah.
But I've seen it on some nights it wasn't New Year's.
Yeah. Year, so. Well, you could...
Like at the end.
When there's masking, there's also dancing, two-step dancing, waltzing, square dancing, you know, whatever, you know, the people know what to do. Growing up, I did a lot of square dancing. My dad was a caller.
Okay.
Yeah, so just mooning. Yeah. So it's hard to lose that tradition. It's always there, you know, how you grew up and like I said, it's different everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's when we moved to Soldovia, we brought that tradition with us. And I'm sure that people from Kenai area that moved to Soldovia, their tradition was different also. Mm-hmm. But they just went along with what they have because they didn't celebrate anymore after. Mm-hmm. I don't know what reasons. Why the reasons? Maybe because the people have died off that, you know, celebrated the holidays.
So when you say you brought your traditions with you to Soldovia, did you find traditions in place also, or was there not much happening in Soldovia when you moved over?
There wasn't much happening in Soldovia. Mm-hmm. I think when me and my parents and my brothers, we moved there, and Dad used to do the reader services in the church. And they condemned the church at one time because it was so worn down. And they put a yellow ribbon around it, and my dad and I used to go to church. We used to crawl under that tape, and we'd open a church, and we'd go to church.
Mm-hmm. And your dad would kind of lead the mm-hmm. worship service?
Mm-hmm. That's where I learned a lot of the church service from, is from my dad.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when it was condemned, approximately? What year?
For 1980. Mm-hmm. That's when it was consecrated.
Again, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I don't remember
78,
that.
78, so. 79. No, 88, 89.
No.
Well, no, it was before that because
you got
that
it
passed in 89.
It would have been, no. The consecration is when they
1980 when the consecration happened.
Right.
So it happened
before
70. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 79, before 79.
Okay. So that, I guess that's one thing I've been curious about is how that, when the community or when the church got kind of fixed up and then reconsecrated, how that whole movement started, who kind of led that and who was involved and what kind of work was done. Do you have any memories of any
yeah,
of
there
that?
Was quite a few people.
Because it's a big project.
The community, I mean, the church members were involved. Elaine Giles and Helen Josephson. I don't know if they'd be able to. Maybe the city. Mm-hmm. But I remember Elaine Giles and Helen were totally involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of fundraising that had to happen for that?
What's that?
Was there a lot of fundraising that had to happen for that?
No, it was a grant.
Oh, okay.
Probably like a historical.
Historical.
Yeah.
Historical grant.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it... They totally redone the foundation, put heating in there, new roof.
Lots of paint.
Paint, yeah.
Carpet? There wasn't carpet.
Carpet, yeah. It was wood floor.
But I think they had to do some structural work to it because that's why it was condemned. It had issues. Because what it is a church that was a smaller church, and you can see inside where there's different boards, like they're not the same.
They added on to it.
So they added on to the mm-hmm. the side that's near the cliff, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it was a school. They taught
okay.
school in the church also mm-hmm. years ago in the mm-hmm. early 1900s.
18. Yeah, I think, wasn't that the first school that was in Soldovia, I think, was the church.
Uh-huh.
Before they built a separate...
Yeah, but they taught, in Russian, and they, you know, they weren't going by a territorial.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere that when they were doing the work in 1980, that they found some old school books or something up in the rafters somewhere.
I know, I heard that, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they did with it.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know.
Yeah.
But one of the cooler things about that whole restoration thing is when USA Today came and interviewed you for that, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
There's a picture of my brother in the church peeking out, and he's probably about 5 or so, huh?
Uh-huh. 4 or 5.
That's
so that,
Peter.
That had to have been after the restoration. So that would have been
yeah.
like 89, 90.
Fresh paint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah, somewhere.
I still have that article.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So that was pretty neat.
So Elaine Giles and Helen Josephson, were they part of the congregation?
Yes.
Okay. And I know I've seen pictures of the consecration that Helen had. The trinkets allowed us to copy scans of those. And I know Katie Kashaveroff is in the pictures. Was she part of the congregation too?
Yes.
Okay.
Clara Oakes.
Mm-hmm. Alice Nutbeam.
Alice Nutbeam.
Yeah. Okay.
Those are the ladies that came from Unga. Down from the chain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is that how my grandmother would have came with them or not? Did they come separate?
Didn't your grandma come from, your dad's grandma came from Kodiak, I think.
Well, one of them is from Unga Island, though.
Maybe it was her. I don't know. You have to ask Frederick.
Yeah, because he's always told me that our relatives are from Unga Island.
What would the names be?
Pontian, right?
Okay.
Pontians are in Kodiak, but I don't know where they originated from.
Right. I think they came from Unga Island, then to Kodiak, and then to Seldovia.
Okay.
As far as, at least that's what I think I was told.
Yeah, because I told Peter, I said, you guys have a relative in Washington. Irene said. What's his name?
Billy.
Billy Pontian. Mm-hmm. That's Dad's uncle's son. Would be your grandma's brother. Grandma Agnes's brother, Alfred.
Got it.
So they've got relatives.
Mm-hmm. We have relatives everywhere.
Make sure I'm not keeping you too terribly long here. Any other, I guess, memories or events that kind of stand out with the church?
I think we kind of covered everything.
One thing you haven't covered is bread.
Huh?
Bread.
Bread?
No, church bread.
Oh.
You've made it though, right?
Uh-huh.
I never have.
Church bread for like communion? Okay. Mm-hmm. So is it unleavened bread or?
Yeah, it is. Doesn't rise. It's made of flour and what did they put in it?
Baking soda?
Is it baking soda? I've never made it. But, you know, typically if we're going to church, like on Sunday, we don't eat before we go to church. You can have coffee, though? Like coffee, water?
It depends on it. If you take meds, you have to take something with your meds.
Yeah. And so you go at 10. And then I would say it's probably 3/4 of the way through church. They have communion, and then they have some of the bread. So it's a little circle, and then it kind of goes in the middle.
It's like biscuits.
Yeah, okay. They kind of have a shape, though, and then they're top, and they're probably about 2 inches tall. And then they have a stamp form, and so they cut it up and put it out. So when you go through communion, then you get to have more bread at the end. And it's the best bread in the world because you're starving.
Okay. So I'm trying to think, there's a, this is terrible because, you know, I should know the objects in the museum better than I do since that is part of my job, but there's a stamp that looks like it's about that tall.
Is it wooden?
It could be wooden or metal.
Yeah.
Okay, I was almost thinking it was stone for some reason.
Yeah, stone.
But
stone, yeah.
And that's for the church.
That's
bread.
For, okay.
All right. I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I think the surface of it's about that big, but
and that would be
about an inch across.
So does each church have one, or does a priest have one? That's what I've always been curious about.
Each church has them because I think you could order them because people make, like they ask somebody to make the bread for communion.
Mm-hmm. So you'd have the stamp at your home and be stamping them before you bake them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or they're at the church, maybe. No,
people had them because I had one. I don't know where it's at. Maybe it's in one of my boxes.
Yeah, you'd almost have to do it before you baked it, right?
Right, you do.
Yeah.
You've seen it.
Okay.
And so everybody's bread is different, too. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, when we're talking about how long you go to church, Because sometimes you'll have a priest that sings really fast and you're out at like 11. You're like, wow. You know, each priest is different, just like how people talk slower, fast. And it's, you know, the older priest, I would say, probably sang slower. And sometimes we wouldn't get out till 12:30.
Some of them are really fast, like Father.
That's why I said sometimes we're out at 11. And
what's his name, Father?
And typically, like once a month, we would have like a little potluck after church, right? Because you're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the communion, instead of like Catholics, they have the wafers. We have bread that's unleavened.
And then would you have wine also? Or
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I would say, do they add water to that?
Mm-hmm.
They dilute it if they use wine, but
and it's hot.
You know, we don't consider
it odd.
We don't consider it wine when it's been blessed.
No. It's actually warmed.
Yeah.
And so, how do they keep it warm?
The thermos, I think, or they have a little hot pot there, don't they?
Thermos, no.
Yeah.
Or thermos, or we bring it in thermos when we don't have. A lot of times, we never had electricity in this church in Saldovia.
Mm-hmm. So it was in a thermos.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain age that people start taking communion?
Oh, you take
everybody?
It when you're eight days old.
Okay. It's such a super tiny amount, though. And like I said, they water it down. Mm-hmm. So when the actual communion part, though, is it's in a chalice with a little bit of the bread and the wine. So you're literally getting like a tiny 100% piece. 100%.
A little spoon, yeah.
Not even like a teaspoon or
quarter of a teaspoon?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And
of
then a chunk of bread. With
okay.
It. Yeah. It's mixed together in the chalice.
Okay.
So. And then when you've gone through, and then there's the extra bread on the side, which is...
The kids used to get so excited because they'd be so hungry.
I was going to say, if you're getting just a little piece, if you've been hungry, that's not going to do very much.
No.
So then you can take another
piece. The chunks are, you know... They're inch by inch or 2 by 2.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how many people there is in church. But when there's nobody in church, they're huge.
You got a whole like biscuit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the kids get excited because they get to eat
or
a
if
bunch
they get
of
to
bread
have seconds.
With a lot of times, the juice that they pour in cups after communion, it's usually canned grape juice maybe or the you know the juice that you mix.
Because it's a bigger quantity. Like in little... Dixie cups is what I always remember.
When I was a kid growing up, it was all wine.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel the hot. I could feel the heat. My body would heat up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you get married, the same. They have a special little
sip
cup. And my husband, and that was heated too, if I remember right. I took a little tiny sip. And he didn't know that ritual.
He drank the whole thing.
Well, I made him drink a lot of it, yes. And he was just like, wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so he drank most of it.
Can you talk just a little bit about some of the wedding traditions in the church? I haven't heard anything about what the weddings are like.
Oh, I got married. Like I said, I got married in Nanuk, in the church in Nanuk, the old church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a ceremony from 9:30, 10 o'clock until 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon because you have to... before you get married, you have to read the instructions and the laws about becoming an Orthodox Christian to marry in the church.
Mine wasn't that long.
Huh?
It wasn't that long.
Well,
yeah.
remember how many years ago? 40-some years ago when I got married.
Yeah, there might have been... And also you had a traveling priest, too, whereas my priest lived there. And so we did, they do, like, a counseling session before, and that I think those are those parts, maybe.
You especially when somebody is non-Orthodox, they have to read, they give you a book to read to understand what it is to get married as an Orthodoxy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're talking about counseling?
But I think what she's asking about is the ceremony. Like when you come in, I came in with my dad, and you wait in the...
Oh, yeah, it's a tradition that your dad brings you in.
Yeah, but they ask...
if you're giving, how does it go?
I can't remember what the terms are. It was 20 years ago. It's like permission, though, that he's giving permission or asking permission for me to come into the church as the bride. And the husband is already in there. And then they transfer from the father to the husband, and then you come in. But what I remember is we went around that middle, what is it, like a podium type thing that holds the icon in the center. And you go around it three times, that I remember. But you have a maid of honor and a best man. You're witnesses, and they have the crowns. So each church has a set of crowns, right? I know ours does. And so they hold them over you during the ceremony for most of it, but not all of it. And they're metal crowns. I think they're velvet lined and they have icons on them. They're really pretty. But I would say it takes some dedication because you're holding it up for a while. It's really pretty, though. What other parts can you remember about the ceremony? I just remember the crowns and you going around it, and you have communion during it.
And what was the reason for the... it's been so long since I've never really looked into it. How many? What's the significant of the circling three times?
I don't know.
And then you stand up by the in front of the altar?
Mm-hmm. At the end.
Is there a tradition of the Trinity in the Russian Orthodox Church?
There's a lot of things in threes. Everything like Trinity-based, I would say. Yeah. So three times around the altar. It seems like there's threes, 12s, and 40. Those are the very common themes. But you start in the foyer, like a porch or the entry, and then you go to kind of the middle area. And then you end up at the top at the...
It's like a prayer for both of you before you enter the altar or enter the into the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving your time today. We really appreciate it. And like I said, it's just memories that we really wanted to save and not have go away related to St. Nicholas Church and some of the traditions in Seldovia, so... We really appreciate you coming to share with us.
And I think we shared a lot of what we've gone through living in the villages that we brought. You know, I'm sure they had different traditions in Seldovia by the Kenai natives that lived there that migrated from Kenai. You know, like we said, everybody's different with their traditions, their beliefs.
Yeah, that was one thing I found interesting looking. We have a book in our library that has a lot of the priest journals that have been translated. And so they talk about, you know, had this service and, you know, we had this many people here and so on. And, you know, and he talks about, and this is early 1900s, you know, 1905, 1910, somewhere there. And he talks about, you know, 160, 150 people at a service, which is... You know, it's hard to imagine 160 Seldovians at anything anymore. Maybe graduation or a basketball game, I guess. Yeah. Maybe.
And that church would get very full.
Yeah.
Like when I had my dad's funeral, there was people outside. It was super. And it's packed in there. And you have the person in there, you know, in the coffin. But the two things we didn't talk about, though, is baptismal. And there's something else I was just thinking about.
And funerals.
Baptismals and funerals. And oh, Names Day. So, yeah, you can talk about Names Day.
Names Day, everybody has a Names Day. And your Names Day is because of your guardian angel, you're named after a guardian angel. Mine is Ludmila. Hers is Agnia, Agnes.
I thought it was a saint. It's not a saint, or is it?
There is saints, yeah. And I do have a picture of, Lydia gave me a picture of Ludmila, Saint Ludmila, and I know you have one too, but we'd have to kind of research on it.
So generally you pick that There's several of them named that, but I think you picked the one closest to your birthday, right?
Yeah.
The day you're born. So, like, I'm born January 28th. My name's day is February 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different, there's other saints with the same name during the calendar year. So that is typically another big feast day where mm-hmm. on your name's day. It's like having a birthday.
And how old would you generally be when you first celebrate that? Would that be as soon as,
right away.
As soon as you're born?
Yeah.
Baptized. Okay.
Yeah. So we're baptized, you know, like a lot of them have confirmations and mm-hmm. they're baptized when they're
8 days old.
No, I mean, I think you have to wait till you're 40 days old for a baptismal.
Well, at that time, I think it's changed. At the time, I was, it could be anywhere 8 to 40 days because
yeah.
the mother can't enter into the church till after she's 40 days after you're born.
Yeah. So what I was saying is I was like Catholics or Lutheran, they're not baptized till they're older. Like I think they're adolescents maybe, but we're baptized as you know,
still infants,
yeah.
And so I noticed you said it's closest to your birthday, but both of you have female saints that you're named for.
Mm-hmm.
So is it always the same gender saint?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Males, girls,
okay.
Women, mm-hmm. women.
Mm-hmm. And so then your name's day is celebrated every year?
Yes.
Also?
Mm-hmm.
And then would that be in the church or is that just among the family?
Among the family and the church.
Okay.
And they sing God grant you many years on your birthday or name's day and holidays.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a celebration. I remember in the villages, you know, there was a name's day, you know, 10 name's days in a month. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have a feast. You're going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so with a baptismal, you, as a parent, you pick two godparents, you know, a male and a female. And so they come to the ceremony. And they have like they have some body of water that they baptize them in, the babies.
Yeah.
Like it's a tub or Trevor's was a basin. Yeah. And they wear white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
But a little shocking for the baby. But
and the baptismal too is you ask a couple that you think that would take over your child if your parents pass, or and they would take in the child as theirs. So we have. Her godparents are in Park Graham. Therefore, their kids are her god brothers and sisters. The same with everybody else.
So and like in church, it's like your spiritual mother too, kind of almost like, or for guidance, I would say maybe in church. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
And yeah, they'd be your guidance as to you. Obey or obedience, mm-hmm. you know, if they see you doing something in church or they teach you something, if you have a question or they kind of volunteer to teach you the beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that kind of keeps the families, you know, connected. It's helped, but I don't know if it's practiced so much anymore. Everybody's so busy. Both parents are working and it's kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate it. And yeah, thank you again.